Nick and Sam, taking you to jungle lands. Bengals pride, it fills the air. Every week we're always there. Touchdowns, tackles, all the plays. Bengals roaring every way. Stories, news, and game recaps. Jungle Juice, we bridge those gaps. Welcome to the Jungle Juice. Nick and Sam, let's break it loose. Cincinnati, hear our call. Bengals fans, unite us all.
Welcome in to the latest edition of the Jungle Juice Podcast. I'm Sam Gormley. He's Mick Nelson. Mick, are you staying warm?
Yeah, it's gotten a little bit better over the past couple days. It was like negative two out. My wife Sam was telling me this morning. I didn't really check to see, but it's been pretty cold out. So
it was awful. So yesterday I did a high school basketball game, and the school that we were doing this game at was like a long walk in. And halfway through, as I'm carrying in all of this equipment, I'm like, this is freaking miserable. Like, I'm like, it's 3 degrees out. It should not be this cold. I'm like, well, at least we're not doing a football game or something like that. Like, it's not completely absolute miserable, but it just was completely awful. But alas, we're not here to talk about the weather. There's a lot more to get to today. Like Cam Grandy, the big news of the week nothing else has happened. Okay. Coming up on the show today, we've got a couple of the news headlines to hit. Al Golden. It's the golden era, right, for the Bengals now. We'll talk about that. And then we're going to dive into the defense as a whole. Pretty much it works out perfectly that the Bengals now have their defensive coordinator. So we're going to talk about the defense and where it was good. And then a lot more about where it was not good. And can it be fixed? Can it be salvaged? I mean, there's a lot of questions surrounding this defense. And what is the biggest aspect of this 2025 Bengals offseason? We invite you to follow us on our show's social media channels. We are on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're also on Twitter. We're also on your favorite podcasting platform. Make sure you visit us there and give us a 5-star rating so more people can find the show that way. But first, we got to hit a couple of the news headlines. Yeah, Josh, welcome to the golden era. That's absolutely right. It's a good way to work, right? We're like, we got to do the Taylor Swift thing, right? Isn't that the way we're supposed to do things now? Golden era? I don't know. News for the week. Really quickly, you know, we talked a lot about the international games. The Dolphins get the game in Madrid. Now, that is at least somewhat interesting for Bengals fans because the Bengals are scheduled to go to Miami. Would Cincinnati-Miami be an intriguing enough game to throw over there? I know Jay Morrison went way into the stats, and he is giving the Bengals like a 50-50 chance.
So we might get to have our cake and eat it too. You know, we get an international game and
not have to lose
ticket holders. We don't lose any games. We get all 9 games next year.
I think it could be a massive win on all parties. And listen, I think that would probably be a fairly intriguing game to send over to Madrid. Like, you're getting a Dolphins team that I don't really know what you're classifying them as next year. I mean, you've got Tua.
They're like, it's like they have Tua, Tyreek, and Jalen Waddle, and they're trying to rebuild the entire rest of the roster right now. Like, they have so many team needs going into 2024. I guess they have the running backs. They have all the skill positions figured out and nothing else.
So I don't know. Maybe that'll happen. Maybe it won't. But at least we wanted to mention that. I give a shout out to Lou Anarumo. Colts defensive coordinator. Good luck to Lou. I think we can all agree with that. I hope he has a lot of success. I have no ill will towards Lou Anarumo whatsoever. He had some great years here, and I wish him absolute best of luck. And then the biggest news of the week, Cam Grandy has signed a 1-year contract extension for the Cincinnati Bengals. So I ask you now, are you going to be rocking a Cam Grandy jersey next season?
No, but I think Schubert probably will, considering his love for Bengals tight ends. But yeah, I think I'm okay with the signing. Thing is, though, I mean, are we just going to carry 5 tight ends every year now? Like, I feel like that's way too many. I mean, you carried 5 this past year, and I guess this contract for Cam Grandy is going to be
exactly
pretty favorable where they can cut him or put him on the practice squad, and minuscule dollars are being lost there. So good for Cam Grandy.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that we're just going to have to sit there and watch as it comes up for Cam Grandy. Let's first start with the first hiring of the week. I guess this happened, was it Monday? I guess it was Monday when the Bengals announced that Scott Peters is their new offensive line coach. He was the Patriots offensive line coach this past season, and prior to that spent years as the Browns assistant offensive line coach where he was under Bill Callahan. I always find it funny with these hirings, and it's the same thing we're going to talk about the defensive line coach. Fans always go, you know, oh, I don't know that guy's name, so he must stink. Like, I mean, how, if we're being honest, like even for you, you would classify yourself as a big NFL fan. How many offensive line coaches can you genuinely name right now?
Okay, yeah, and going into this hiring process, I knew two of them. Actually, three of them, I guess, counting Paul Alexander, which didn't happen.
Bill Callahan, right? You weren't going to get him.
We're going to go with three because I was looking for Frank's replacement last year, right?
Yes.
So, Bill Callahan, Aaron Cromer from the Bills, and the guy we just freaking hired, Scott Peters from the Cleveland Browns, because he was in the Bill Callahan coaching tree. I love this hire. I'm a big fan of the hire. Now, I know last year, New England wasn't a great year for the offensive line. It was a particularly poor season. I think they were ranked either dead last or second to last in pass block grade from PFF. But like you said, he's a Bill Callahan disciple. And we've seen a lot of good offensive lines from the Browns the past 4 years. And let's not forget how bereft of talent the New England Patriots offensive line was in 2024. It was terrible.
Offensive lineman worth a damn.
They have one offensive lineman responsible for Joe Burrow ACL tear. That's how bad their offensive line was. So, you know, if anybody who's discounting the hire because, oh, he was on the Patriots offensive staff last year do a little more research, buddy. That's what I'm saying there.
And then they hired Mike McCarthy as his assistant, right? Which that I think was the other thing that people were just kidding. Michael McCarthy.
I mean, it's like when we had Michael Thomas, the safety.
Yes. And Mike Thomas, the receiver. But not the Mike Thomas.
We did have Mike Thomas, the receiver.
Yes. The headhunter, right? As the gunner on the outside. To me, though, here's the biggest aspect with this hire is, who is Zach Taylor's best friend in coaching? You know, we talked about this a lot this season. Brian Callahan, you know, from the Titans. Zach Taylor has said that they talk still every week, if not every single day, something like that. You don't think that Zach Taylor talked to Brian, who talked to Bill, and Bill gave him his, like, blessing of saying, yes, this guy's going to be really good?
And let's not forget that Zach Taylor played for Bill Callahan in college at Nebraska. That was his coach when he won Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year in the mid-2000s. So he's pretty tight with both of those guys, I would assume.
Mike asks, why take a guy who had an awful line? Isn't it his job to develop? The same reason Lou caught the axe. Mick, what's your answer to Mike?
I'm sorry. I was looking up something else.
Why take a guy who had an awful line? Isn't it his job to develop? The same reason that Lou caught the axe.
They had one guy to develop on that offensive line, and it was a third-round pick that they reached on. I don't know if that was a pick. I guarantee Scott Peters probably didn't have a lot of say in that pick because the New England Patriots GM has been pretty hands-on with everything. So I don't think that Scott Peters had much say in who they had. And like I said, they had Michael Jordan starting on the offensive line, the guy who essentially tore Joe Burrow's ACL in 2020.
Yeah, and my thing is, too, is he was the offensive line coach there for, what, 6 months? Because, I mean, you got to think he was hired about a year ago. So, really, he had a little bit no TAs. And then he had training camp in the season. So, it's not like he had time to genuinely develop some of these younger guys.
Yeah.
Now, the hope is that he's got a little bit more polish with some of the Bengals guys. Because, I mean, you've got a left tackle who probably you don't need to do much with. Orlando Brown Jr. If he continues playing like he did when before the injury this year, you don't have much to worry about there. You've got Mims, who showed a lot of signs. That's going to be the guy that you're really going to put a lot of focus in. And then you've got a veteran center. So for an offensive line coach, he's got a little bit of everything that he probably would like in this opportunity.
Yeah,
so
and he's also had very recent experience of developing another massive man playing right tackle right now, who didn't have as good of a year this past year, but had a great 2023 season. And do you know who I'm talking about?
For the Browns?
Yeah, for DeJuan Jones. I mean, that was a guy that we were looking at drafting a couple of years ago. I was also doing research because we were looking. There is another offensive line coach that's also very close to Zach Taylor that could have been hired too. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Jim Turner?
No, Zach Taylor's father-in-law, Mike Sherman.
Yeah.
I forgot he was an offensive line coach. But anyways, yeah, I think the Scott Peters hire was really a good hire. I was a big fan of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll be interested to see what comes of it. Okay, let's get to the big hire of the day that happened earlier today. Well, I guess it's not officially official.
And we also have a defensive line coach, I believe, as well.
Yeah. We'll tie both of these into this. We'll start with a big one. Al Golden is, you know, we've talked about his name now for, the last 3 weeks, pretty much. I think we even were talking about it before Lou Anarumo was actually fired, of him being the guy that we kind of felt like was going to be the most logical pick for the Cincinnati Bengals to take over. And today it came out that is pretty much officially official. I guess as official can get without actually getting the tweet or the Facebook post from the Bengals tomorrow saying, hey, this is actually what's going to happen.
Yeah. I'd say it's pretty official at this point.
Yeah. So Al Golden is the defensive coordinator. Your first reaction to Al Golden as the Bengals defensive coordinator in 2025.
He wasn't at the top of my list. Now, what he's done at Notre Dame is really impressive. I guess part of the reason why I'm a little skeptical is how much of that is Marcus Freeman and how much of that is Al Golden, because of Marcus Freeman being a defensive head coach, him having really good defensive units when he was at UC, when he was at Notre Dame prior to getting the head coaching job when Brian Kelly left. So that's one reason I'm a little skeptical of it. Another reason is he was the linebackers coach when he was here, I believe in 2020 and 2021, and we didn't really see progress in Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt's play until Al Golden left.
Oh, see, I disagree with that.
If you look at the grading gets a lot better for both of those linebackers after 2021. I mean, Pratt's best season was 2022, second best 2023. Third best season was 2024. He's constantly grading in the mid to low 50s, and it had a 42 graded 2020 season prior to that. And then Logan Wilson, it's kind of the same story. But, you know, maybe he's a better defensive coordinator than he is a linebackers coach. We've seen that him have good records of success as a head coach at the collegiate level with Temple and and, you know, he wasn't great at Miami, but he wasn't terrible. I mean,
he's been their last good coach, really. I mean, like, Miami's just been in the pit of mediocrity, and now Golden at least had them somewhat decent at periods while he was there.
Yeah. So there's that. And seeing what he's built at Notre Dame is, you know, the defense has played fairly solid over there. So, you know, I'm willing to give it a try. I don't think it was the best splash hire that they could have done. I don't know if it definitely wasn't a guy that was toward the top of my list as to who I would want, but I think he was the obvious favorite for the job. He has good rapport with Zach Taylor, and let's see what he's got.
For Al Golden, I think, you know, Paul Daner Jr. said in his article in The Athletic today, which I found was really interesting, he said that he bought a house, Al Golden, when he coached the linebackers to the Bengals from 2020 to 2021. He bought a house on the same street as Zach Taylor and never sold it. His children have remained in Cincinnati high schools. He commutes to South Bend. So I guess he has an apartment up there.
Cincinnati guy through and through. Or yes. Not, I mean, he's a Cincinnati guy now.
He's living there. He didn't sell his house, move his family, stayed neighbors and close friends with Zach Taylor throughout this entire aspect of it. Now, I'd never really heard any of that. Not that I'm over here saying, like, oh, I know everything about where the coaches live. But that at least means something. And Zach Taylor is putting all of his baskets into a friend. Because, I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This hire is going to determine whether Zach Taylor is the head coach this year. Next season. Meaning in 2026. Because if this hire bombs and the defense doesn't improve and it's awful and the Bengals are 9-8 again next year, I don't know that he's the head coach next season. And this is coming as somebody who's pro Zach Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it entirely hinges on the defense being elite. Like you said, we just need it to be decent.
So that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, it needs to work. Like, it can't be what it's been.
Yeah, and I want to see guys develop under Al Golden. I think that's part of the reason why Lou got fired, is that we just weren't seeing any recent draft picks. And and people that say we haven't spent highly on the defensive side of the football, just look at the last three drafts that the Bengals have had, the first three rounds. I mean, seven of those guys were on the defensive side of the football. One guy's not on the team anymore because of how poorly he played. And we just haven't had a definite franchise cornerstone piece out of those guys that were drafted.
It'll be interesting to see how this all develops as well under Al Golden. And it was also announced earlier today, Paul Daner Jr. reporting that Jerry Montgomery will be the Bengals defensive line coach. Jerry Montgomery last season with the Patriots. So we got, I guess, just look whoever the Patriots linebackers coach was last year. I guess that's who's going to be the Bengals new linebacker coach. I think that's probably how it works. Before that, though, he spent a long time with the Packers from 2018 to 2023 as their defensive line coach. Prior to that, he spent a couple of years with the Packers as like their defensive pass rush coach or something. It was like his title or something along the lines of that. I'll be honest with you. This was the first time I'd ever heard the name Jerry Montgomery.
Mm-hmm. So, Same here. Yeah, maybe, it's kind of like offensive line coach where you're not expected to really know the name. And you kind of go back to how the Packers have graded on the defensive line. I mean, it's been fairly solid over the span of his career here. I'm just looking at it right now, but I mean, we're looking about middle of the road grades of pass rush play, defensive line play, which it's a lot better than what we had this past season. So, or really the past couple seasons outside of Trey. So,
To me, the calling card of this defensive court, of this defensive line coach, of Jerry Montgomery, is going to be surrounding one player and then a player that we don't know yet. And it's Miles Murphy. Like, you're going to have to get something out of Miles Murphy as a first-round pick. And because I don't think Marion Hobby got really much of anything out of him. You're hoping that he can do something to Miles Murphy to turn him into a first-round talent. Because right now, I mean, Miles Murphy he was outperformed almost this year by, sixth-round pick Cedric Johnson?
Mm-hmm. See, I don't know if it necessarily has to be Miles Murphy. That might have been a bad pick, as far as we know. But we need to see some other edge rusher or pass rusher other than Trey Hendrickson develop into a really good, maybe not top tier, but like a DJ Reader-esque in terms of the pass rush productivity type of pass rusher.
You could even say of prime Sam Hubbard. You know, like four years ago, Sam Hubbard. That's what you need. You don't need, I mean, listen, four Trey Hendricksons would be incredible. But nobody has that. Like, nobody has elite. I mean, the pinnacle of that is, you know, you got the guys like the Steelers who have multiple guys that they can run out there. The Bengals are probably never going to be that aspect because they have an offense, unlike the Steelers. Like, they have to pay people on offense. So it's that fine line when it comes to all of that. But I mean, I think that both of these hires, the Al Golden one, I'm excited. And I know from what I can understand to me, the best way to judge something like this is you go and you look at the team he's leaving, their fan reaction to him getting the job.
Sure.
And you're seeing a lot of Notre Dame fans upset. And meaning, like, this is a big loss for that team because Al Golden had done such a good job in their eyes. I saw Mike Golic Jr., who I think he played at Notre Dame. At least I saw him on Twitter today saying that it was a huge loss. Huge loss for Notre Dame and so on. He's going to do a great job with the Bengals. Now, the Al Golden philosophy, too, is a lot more blitzing, a lot more man coverage. So I'm okay with that.
I'm okay. So you're definitely trying to switch it up a little bit from what Lou's been doing.
He's not quite Wink Martindale as far as a blitzer, but he's definitely not Lou Anarumo when it comes to blitzing.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see how that turns around. Anything else on Al Golden or Jerry Montgomery or Seth Peters? Seth Peters, is that his name or Sam? Scott Peters. I knew it was an S name. Scott Peters or Michael McCarthy, shout out to Brown. I got nothing on him really whatsoever.
He's not a Dartmouth guy, though.
That's right. I didn't even think about that.
He's not a Dartmouth guy.
I'm surprised they hired him, if that's the aspect. Ivy League rivalry.
I bet they feel a little dirty after doing that.
And I think Duke Tobin's William and Mary, maybe?
Is that where Duke Tobin went?
I think that's right. I think he was, or maybe I'm thinking of somebody else on their staff. Mike writes in, I like the blitzing.
Duke Tobin went to Colorado.
Really? Who? There's somebody on staff that was William & Mary then.
Oh, I'm just, the whole Brown family went to Dartmouth.
Yeah, there's somebody else that maybe was a quarterback, or I might just be completely making it up. Let's go into the Bengals defense this year. The Bengals defense this year. And, I think we should just dive right in.
We got a lot to discuss.
There is. And let's start with the pro, the happy. The guy who might be the defensive player of the year. How's that sound?
Mm-hmm.
The defensive player of the year, Sheldon Rankins. Great seat, though. Trey Hendrickson. I mean, he is one of the elite pass rushers in the NFL.
Yeah. He had a really good season this year. What did he total? 18 and a half sacks? Is that what it was? Is that what the final tally was?
18 and a half sacks.
So I mean, I want to say with the PFF measures stats differently or sacks differently. They think half sacks are stupid, which I kind of agree with. Like, give the person that got more of the sack to that person instead of giving half sacks. But yeah, really good season. 18 sacks, 83 total pressures, 16 QB hits. They don't have the season long pass rush win rate, at least that's on the defensive stats. What's the pass?
His pressure win percentage was 20%.
His pass rush win percentage was 20%.
Correct.
His PRP rate was 10.4. 90 pass rush grade. I mean, yeah, it was an elite season from Trey Hendrickson. And I don't know if anything more can be said. I mean, he flat out won games for us on the defensive side of the football. I mean, going back as recently as the Pittsburgh game, last game of the season. I mean, you needed to close out that game. It was a close game. Pittsburgh got back. And Trey Hendrickson looks like that closer that we're so used to seeing him play like. And he's, I mean, best defensive player we've had since Geno.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. And I know we've talked about this, Mick. And I feel like I need to like wash my mouth out after I say it. Should the Bengals trade Trey Hendrickson this offseason?
They should.
Ugh. It feels disgusting that I even said it.
So that gives the more of a job for Jerry Montgomery if they trade away Trey, which I think there's a very high possibility of doing that.
I just find it funny, though, and I think Paul Daner brought this up, is it's like, welcome, Al Golden. Guess what? You have one player on your defense that's actually good. We're going to trade him away. Good luck.
Good luck. Figure it out.
Yeah.
develop these guys. You got to find two guys to develop. That's where Miles Murphy probably comes back into play a little bit.
But here's my question. It is, and I see Robert writes in here and says, Max Crosby, his contract makes him almost untradeable. Like, when you look into it, it's pretty much no chance of him being traded. But here's, and I'm curious, because I was thinking about this, and I really don't know the answer. What would you get from Trey Hendrickson?
I think you get at least a second-round pick out of the guy, just because of how value-heavy that contract is, at least on this season. I mean,
because you got 1 year
on
Trey Hendrickson. And here's the aspect of it that I think is going to be interesting to watch, though, is you have to get at least a second. Because Trey Hendrickson, you'd think, would bring a high-value compensatory pick if he would leave in free agency. You'd think would probably bring a third or a fourth round compensatory pick. So to me, my thought is you know, okay, maybe you trade him for a high round or a high pick in the third round. Is moving up 25 spots in the third round, or I guess 30 spots in the third round, worth not having Trey Hendrickson on the team next year?
Can't say it would.
Now, is moving up a round and a half worth that? I don't know. I mean, it is, because, I mean, the Bengals aren't going to re-sign him. I can't imagine that they do.
And unless he's not they can. He is going to hold out under how the deal is currently going. Like, it's. I don't think there's really any way around. You're either extending a guy that's going to be 32 years old at the end of this contract, or I guess he'll be 31 this year, 32 at the end. Or you try to get some value out of the guy.
Because I see Robert writing in and say, I want us to be competitive. It's an interesting point, and it's a philosophical discussion that I think is worth us having, is because is trading Trey Hendrickson for a second round pick and getting another young guy make the Bengals more competitive?
Given the how expensive two of our guys are going to be on the roster, you're going to have to get some youth somewhere. And we don't know when that cliff is going to happen for Trey. Like I said, he's 31 years old in 2025. That cliff is coming sooner than it would be for a guy you could draft earlier in the draft this year. And hopefully he can develop under Al Golden. And that's what you hired Al Golden to do, is to get some youth on this defense and try to right the wrongs that you've got, that the franchise has done on the defensive side of the football the past 3 years.
Let's say I am a team, and I don't know what team this is. Let's just for sake of conversation. And I call Duke Tobin, and you're Duke Tobin. And I say, hey, Duke, I am going to offer you my third round pick, which is pick 12. Pick 12 in the third round for Trey Hendrickson.
So pick number 76.
Or what are you saying? No. What if I say a third and a sixth?
A third and a sixth?
Or a third and a fifth. Like, what would you, if you're Duke Tobin, where you're not going to immediately hang up the phone and at least have a discussion? Because we know that the Bengals overvalue.
I want a second round draft pick.
Now, would you do straight, like, would you do the 55th pick?
Yes.
You would.
Yes.
It is just interesting. I mean, as Mike says here, so we let him stay. He plays after holding out all offseason and walks the next year. We get nothing for him. These are the same types of decisions that have kept the Bengals in the basement as far as the franchise is concerned. Now, they won't technically get nothing, because they would get a compensatory selection for him unless they sign a free agent that next offseason that cancels that out, which is possible. Steve says, I'd need a 2022 second with it, and I take it.
Yeah. And don't forget, and on top of a second round draft pick or even a third round, you are getting $16 million freed up in cap space. That's not a small number.
It is. And I mean, Riley says here, if we can get Trey back for a team friendlier deal, keep him. If not, trade him for a second. Yeah, why would he? I mean, why would you?
Player of the year, potentially. Well, you ain't going to take a team friendly deal.
I mean, he is, and he knows in his heart of hearts that he's probably got what?
And if, but I do.
If we're on a positive realm, he's got two more elite years, maybe three. And that's me being optimistic about it, just the way that things go. You want to make your money now while you can.
Mm-hmm. And Riley brings up a really good point. This edge class this season is deep.
Really good.
It's deep. It's not just deep. It's top heavy deep. There are edge rushers everywhere, especially in the first round. It's about as deep, especially in the first round, as the tackle class was this past season, where you got your cornerstone tackle and Amarius Mims. You're getting the edge rusher equivalent to that potentially. I mean, you've got players like Mike Green for Marshall, which I will be mentioning his name quite a bit over the next couple of months. You've got guys like Shamar Stewart out of Texas A&M, James Pierce Jr. out of Tennessee. Abdul Carter will be off the board very early, so we're probably not going to talk about him that much. And then even if you look in the second round, and say if you want to go with three tech, which there's a couple three techs in the first round that they're going to be looking at, you still have the Ohio State duo in JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer, Josiah Stewart out of Michigan. There are so many edge rushers that we're going to get to in this draft. And also, we don't just need another, you know, pressure from the edge. If you can find pressure from the interior, I think that's more lethal than anything else as well. I mean, the best pass rusher in football for the past, you know, 10 years, 15 years, who was a game breaker came from the interior.
We don't need to mention his name. I'm going to have bad flashbacks. Bad flashbacks. Pronounce it, Mick.
Umon Mielen. Princely Umon Mielen is also very high on my draft board, especially. I don't think he falls to the second round where the Bengals are picking, but I do like him quite a bit as well.
Steve asks, yeah, but we already need a second rusher, so is it worth getting rid of the one we have now? And there's no guarantee these draft picks work out. That's what we banked on, and look where we are. But you're... And listen, I understand that point from Steve. Like, I understand it completely. It's just there's only, I know Duke Tobin at the Combine will always talk, and then we'll probably have to move on because there's a lot more of the defense to talk about. But this to me is the underrated talking point of the defense this year. Is there, you've got your pie. There's only so much pie that you can give around. And you're going to have a huge slice of this pie are going to go to at least two guys, if not even three, depending on whether the T. Higgins done deal gets done or not. But you know Burrow's got a large slice of the pie. You know Jamar Chase is going to get a big slice of the pie, and you're thinking that T. Higgins is probably going to get a big slice too. You're not going to be able to give a fourth slice of the pie to Trey Hendrickson. You just can't. I'd love it, but this is not. We're not the Los Angeles Dodgers. The NFL doesn't work that way.
No. The Bengals, it's not an issue of cap space, by the way. I mean, the Bengals know how to work the cap better than any franchise in the NFL, mostly because they're very economical, but it's all about the cash they also have. When all these teams are offering a lot more guaranteed money than what we've seen in the past, in having to have those liquid assets in order to offer that guaranteed money. It's you got to get a little bit smarter. You got to have some money ball mentality there. You got to be savvy like the front office has been. And we've seen this front office construct some good defenses, throughout our entire fandom, whether it's been through the draft or through free agency. I mean, if you look at the Marvin Lewis years, I mean, that defense was built entirely through the draft, and that was a top five defense more often than it wasn't in that 5-year playoff run stretch. And then Mike, you look at the defense the past couple of years, I mean, they've built it through free agency.
Mike says guarantee money has to be cash that goes into escrow. Yes. From the best of my knowledge, yes, it has to go into escrow for the guaranteed monies.
Yeah. So you need to have liquid hard cash. And yeah, we can talk about, the Browns are a billionaire family. The franchise is worth $2.1 billion. That's what I saw that the Forbes list reported. There's a difference between having $2.1 billion in liquid hard cash or some type of liquid asset and having it all or the vast majority of it being locked up into the value of the franchise.
It is. I mean, Mike Brown is not Stan Kroenke, where he can literally just he poops out money pretty much. Like, he's not.
No.
That's why the Bengals are a family run organization. I did see, and we'll do this one last thing, and then we'll move on to talk about more things in the defense. Steve asks, how bad do you want a championship? Look what the Rams did to get their chips. F them picks. The Bengals are never going to do that. They value draft picks too much. The Bengals might value draft picks more than any franchise in the NFL.
Yeah, I'd say that them, the Cowboys and the Packers are exclusively... Not maybe not exclusively, because we've seen the Bengals dip their toes in free agency a lot more than they've had in prior campaigns. But they're definitely...
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hopefully trying to build this thing through the draft. And sometimes you have good drafts, sometimes you have bad drafts too. I mean, it's a crapshoot every year, yeah, but... Also, it's not like this free agency class is really like buzzing with edge rusher names right now either.
Mike says it's hard truth to accept. But if the team is really in win now mode, you have to trade. Ooh, that's a little harder to say than I thought. You have to start playing chess, not checkers. It is interesting with it. Okay, let's go to more on the defensive line. We've talked about Trey Hendrickson, and something tells me that's not going to be the last time we're going to talk about that this offseason. Probably it's going to turn into a big story to talk about. Let's go with some of the free agent decisions for that defensive line. You know, you've got Sam Hubbard. Well, I guess Sam Hubbard's not technically a free agent decision, but he's kind of in that realm of being a free agent decision because they can cut him and save money against the cap. BJ Hill, Joseph Osai. Sheldon Rankins too. Technically, you can throw in there too because there ain't no way in hell he's coming back. But I think of those guys, I think Osai is the most likely that he's on the team next year.
Yeah, especially if they trade away Trey. If we're looking at edge rushers who are like currently slated to be free agents, or, like I said, the free agency class is not particularly good this year. And Joseph Osai is one of those names that, and that's the thing. That's the problem with Osai too. I mean, there's going to be teams, I think, that might throw some money his way.
Carl Lawson.
I not nearly to that extent,
no,
but probably throw some more money his way than what the Bengals might be willing to offer him, because we did see him come on pretty strong towards the end of this past season.
The rookies on that defensive line, and I'm counting in the rookies Miles Murphy. I'm just kind of throwing him in there because he really didn't play a lot last season. He had played a ton of snaps, so I'm just kind of looping that in there. I think we've seen some flashes, especially, I think, you know, McKinley Jackson, I down the stretch was actually making some pretty decent plays as a third round pick. I'm excited to see what he could do.
Yeah. I think he came on pretty strong towards the end of the year. A lot like how I just spoke about Joseph Osai. If you look at the grading last 4 weeks of the year, you look just at, we'll look at run defense and pass rush. Pass rush grade didn't really change that much, but if you look at the run defense, so the pass rush always hovered around the low 60s to high 50s range, which isn't necessarily good, but the run defense was pretty damn good for McKinley Jackson towards the end of the year. I mean, we're looking at an 87 grade against the Titans, 62 against the Browns, 82 against the Broncos, and 67 against the Steelers. And I think we saw him be... definitely a stabilizing force in the interior of that defensive line. Now, do I think he's DJ Reader? Don't think of that by any means. Do I think we can improve at nose tackle? I do think that we can. But I think the best defensive lines in the NFL have that depth that you can consistently rotate in and out. I mean, you look at what the Bills have done for the past 5 years. I mean, that defensive line, pass rush, whatever you want to call it, has been rolling eight defensive linemen deep in constantly rotating guys in and out to keep them fresh. And you've seen the success that they've had as a defensive unit for almost this, probably the entire decade at this point.
I think to me, McKinley Jackson is better Josh Tupou. In the realm of, like, he is like your 1.5 nose guard, nose tackle. You know what I mean? Like, Josh Tupou was always going to be your number two. If he played, okay, you know, you were fine.
Why don't you at least give him like a Pat Sims?
Yeah, okay.
I'll give a Pat Sims kind of throw out there.
And I'm not necessarily calling him a Josh. I'm more just using Josh Tupou as Josh Tupou was always the backup. You never really wanted Josh Tupou to be your number one. I think McKinley Jackson's maybe a little bit closer to that, but I don't think he is quite as, oh crap, Josh Tupou's playing. You know, if McKinley Jackson, because I think you've seen some bright spots, I guess, from him. Other defensive line talk. Do we have to? Is this where we give our Lawrence guy and oh, who was the other guy that we got to make sure? And what was his name? KJ Henry takes now, right?
They're not on Remember the team them? Anymore.
Yeah, I mean, but they were on there for a while. Chris Jenkins.
What a disappointing season.
Yeah.
It was pretty disappointing. 54 pass rush grade. Let's see what the win rate was.
I mean, he didn't play like a second round pick at all.
A 3% pass rush win rate. God awful. That's not even Sam Hubbard bad. Sam Hubbard had a 4.2% pass rush win rate. This might point to why Marion Hobby does not have a job anymore. And why Lou maybe doesn't have a job anymore. That's your second round pick that you were expecting to pay dividends right away.
Maybe to a fault expecting.
Yeah. And maybe it's an issue of scouting, which still I would put on Lou because I guarantee Lou had a very heavy hand, especially with the scouting department being so thin. This coaching staff is heavily involved in the scouting of players. It's not like the grading was that great at Michigan. He was like constantly grading in like the mid 70s, but out of a second round pick, you probably expect somebody to be grading a little bit better. And I know that we didn't get Chris Jenkins necessarily for his pass rush prowess, but his run defense is what we were definitely banking on, and that graded even worse than his pass rush in 2024.
There's a lot of hope for him next year that maybe this, you know, the new defensive line coach and Jerry Montgomery and Al Golden can find something from him. There's hope in that. BJ Hill, what do they do?
He's gone.
I agree. I think you're hoping to maybe find in free agency the young BJ Hill.
Yeah.
The younger BJ Hill. And try and find a 26, 27 year old free tech that is not going to cost you an arm and a leg. You know, you're looking for Larry Ogunjobi from the 2020 or 2021 offseason. I can't remember if they signed him to a 1 or 2 year deal. Mm-hmm. I think it was a 1 year deal in 2021.
Yeah. And I think there's some names in the interior defensive line free agent class that might be kind of worth looking at. It's not anything groundbreaking, but Osa Odighizuwa out of the Dallas Cowboys, he's been starting there primarily on the interior defensive line for the past 4 years. He's played fairly solid. You've got guys like Treshawn Wharton from the Chiefs, who's looked pretty good at times. Levi Onwuzurike from Detroit. Milton Williams from the Eagles. There's a lot of younger names who may not be household names, but can serve in that BJ Hill type of capacity.
Linebackers. Let's go on to them and keep this moving when we talk about the defense. I mean, Logan Wilson, prior to his injury, was having a really solid season for the Bengals. I mean, he was, other than Trey Hendrickson, probably their second best defensive player for the majority of the season this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you saw a drop off, especially in the linebacker play, once he got hurt.
Yeah, I think it took it definitely took some time for it to get going. Now, I think the linebacker play definitely came on pretty strong towards the end of the season. The Broncos and the Steelers game, I thought Pratt played really good ball both of those games. But yeah, I mean, it's him. You immediately felt the impact of his departure from his injury in that Steelers game, that first Steelers game where they gave up 41 points to a Russell Wilson led offense, and which is frankly inexcusable.
It was more than that too, wasn't it? Wasn't it 45?
44? Well, no, it's really 37 points because seven of those points was a fumble return for a touchdown. But yeah, and you know, part of that might be you're missing the green dot. You know, Logan Wilson wore the green dot. He was calling the defensive plays. And when you have a change in that, you know, the communication probably suffers quite a bit, which it definitely did in that game.
I'm interested now because, I mean, here is the one positive, is that the Bengals defensive coordinator knows what he's getting in Jermaine Pratt. Coached him for 2 years. To where that decision in the offseason, where I, you know, we talked about it last or 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago or whatever it was, you know, the money you'd be saving by cutting Jermaine Pratt is not, it's not as obvious of a cut as like a Sheldon Rankins or a Sam Hubbard. But it's not one that you're not going to cut, you know, like the Bengals aren't going to cut Joe Burrow for obvious, for many reasons, but contractually they can't cut him because, you know, it'd be contract hell. You know, Paul Daner said in his article last week or the week before that he thinks it's an 80% chance that Jermaine Pratt is gone.
And that guy knows some things.
He does. He knows a lot more than both of us. There's no question on that. And I'll be interested to see. Steve asks, did anyone see Logan Wilson's mattress commercial? I've not seen that. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen that. Akeem Davis Gaither. I mean, I think up and down, you know, he made a great play. You remember back to the Chiefs game where he intercepted Patrick Mahomes early on in that game and made some big plays throughout the season, but then had some moments, especially in that Steelers game where he was really exposed at times. He's a free agent again. I don't know whether he's back or not.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I don't think anybody's lining up to pay ADG a lot of money. No. And when nobody's lining up to do it, you got a guy that's familiar with maybe not like too familiar with the scheme. I think he may have had, what, 1 year with Al Golden?
Yes, because he was a 2020 pick, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they went three linebackers.
He does have familiarity with Al Golden. You know, he's cheap. He's familiar with the players on the defensive side of the football, on the roster. I mean, I don't see why you don't bring him back if he's going to be as cheap as he was this past offseason.
Yeah, because I think they got him for 1 for 4 or something, and I think you could probably get him for about that much again next year. I wouldn't be stunned to see them, and I think it was Charlie Goldsmith that brought up the point that he expects, or his prediction is, that the Bengals are going to make and he just used this as an example, a Josh Bynes linebacker signing. Meaning, not obviously Josh Bynes, because Josh Bynes now is, what, 33 years old or however old he is, but finding a, you know, an older linebacker, you know, maybe in that second contract, 27, 28, maybe not your elite guy, but a guy that's just going to go in there and you can forget that he's there.
Robert Spillane is a free agent this offseason.
That would be a good pick. I know you, you're a big Robert Spillane guy, even on the Las Vegas Raiders, right?
Yeah. That's my, Madden franchise cornerstone piece. Robert Spillane. Yeah, but Robert Spillane is probably a good example of that, or like a Kaiser White from Arizona. Cody Barton from Denver would be a good one.
Andy Stutzman.
Why don't we just sign Zach Bond to a ton of money? Considering considering how good of a year he's had this season.
Let's go to corners. Cam Taylor-Britt. I don't know that there's been a guy in recent memory for a Bengal that had as a roller coaster of a season as Cam Taylor-Britt did this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it went on a ride. I mean, allowed a perfect passer rating 4 times this season, was benched a couple of times, made some great plays sometimes. He had some really good games. I mean, he had one of the best interceptions you're ever going to see. I mean, he is going to be one of your starting corners next year. More so based on the fact that they probably aren't going to pay somebody to take his spot. But I think you saw enough, and your hope is that maybe Al Golden's philosophy or something can help out a little bit more with that.
Yeah, and I think we saw an improved Cam Taylor bit throughout the towards the second half of the season as well. There were some real rough games in the early part of the year after the Kansas City game. I mean, he has like an 8-week stretch of poor quarterback play, to say the least. I mean, I just remember how bad he was in that Chargers game that pretty much forced Lou to bench him, and then DJ Turner gets hurt and he had to be thrown back out there. Remember watching that Panthers game? We were sitting up next to them seat pounders, bleacher seat pounders, those Panthers fans, watching Cam Taylor Britt get blown on deep balls like 3 or 4 times in that game, which wasn't great to see. But then you started seeing some games towards the end of the season. He had really good games against the Steelers. The first Steelers game, he had that pick six, ended up grading fairly well in that game. And it really just had a 4-game stretch there where, you know, he was looking like the Cam Taylor Britt that we were used to seeing, the Cam Taylor Britt from 2023 that we thought was going to take that giant step forward. But nonetheless, it was a disappointing year overall for him. We were kind of expecting him to make that next step to be maybe not one of the best corners in the league, even though that's what you predicted for him to be an all-pro.
No. I said he'd have 8 interceptions, which probably would have made him an all-pro. But
he would have been up there for all-pro.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Jermaine Burton. We both had our
this is the defensive show, buddy. So, we were expecting him to make that next step forward, and unfortunately you didn't see it. I guess now to transition, I think we did see some steps forward from the two corners out of Michigan.
Yeah. And both of them got hurt at the exact wrong time. Not that there's ever a good time to get hurt. But you, both of those guys with DJ Turner and Dax Hill, you were seeing them hit their moment of they finally got it. Like, you know, DJ Turner was playing great, especially in the game against the Chargers when he got hurt. He was playing great. Dax Hill was playing great when he got hurt. Just awful timing on both of those injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, if there's one part of the roster that I'm fairly confident in making improvements, or in playing decently as long as they can stay healthy, it's that defensive backfield. I mean, that's like you said, DJ Turner had a great game against the Chargers prior to getting hurt. I mean, we saw him have, when he was thrusted into action, I mean, he ended up having a season grade of 67.8. 68.4 in coverage. We saw him have good games against Carolina, that game against the Browns, in which we saw him make a few plays, Chargers game, like you said, and then moving on to Dax Hill. I mean, I think he's a better corner than he is a safety. saying a lot, but yeah,
without question.
I mean, we only saw really one bad game against Dax Hill, in the PFF grading, and that happened to be against Jaden Daniels, the guy who's willing his team to maybe a Super Bowl.
Yeah, without question. And then Josh Newton, I think, he played like a day 3 corner at times, but he also showed some flashes that I think, if he is your cornerback 4, cornerback 5, I think you're feeling pretty decent. Like that's a pretty decent depth piece. Now, I don't know that you want him starting full time, but I think he's a nice depth piece moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, if shit hits the fan, we have some injuries happen in the defensive backfield. I feel a lot more comfortable with him stepping forward after what we saw this season.
DJ Ivy, you didn't really get a ton of opportunities for him. Plus, I kind of give him a pass this year coming off of an ACL injury. He kind of gets a free pass this year. But I'll be interested to see, because I do think that there, it would be nice to see a veteran corner added to that room this free agency.
Yeah.
If anything else, you just need depth out there. And you don't need, and by veteran corner, I don't mean Sydney, whatever the hell his name was.
Sydney Jones.
Yeah. You need a veteran corner that could actually play.
Yeah.
Maybe not a Cheeto, but maybe in that Cheeto realm of finding somebody who's cheaper, but is just a solid under-the-radar corner. I mean, they hit the jackpot with Cheeto a couple of years ago.
We're going to talk about Mike Hilton.
I think he's the next logical one on the corners. Do you bring him back? Over 30. In coverage, he was a problem.
He's still graded decently. It's not like he was a problem. He wasn't as good as he usually has been.
But how much of that is terrible? How much of that is he's 30?
I don't know.
Can you rely on him moving forward?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of signing people once they've hit that 30 age mark,
especially corners.
So I think that there are good corners in this draft pack, in this draft class, that can play the nickel pretty well. And these aren't guys that you have to spend really high draft picks on. You can draft them in the third, fourth, fifth round, and still get value out of them. I mean, hell, I think Mike Hilton was drafted where?
Undrafted.
He was an undrafted free agent. Yeah. And he's been one of the best slot corners in the league for the majority of his career. But yeah, I mean, it's I think there's some good slot corners in this draft class. We're talking about guys like Jadae Barron out of Texas, who had a really good year. But if you didn't want to spend, and he's probably the highest he'd spend on a draft pick for a slot corner. I mean, he's tabbed as a early second round pick right now. But if you're even looking in the third, fourth, those mid rounds, I mean, you got guys like Jabbar Muhammad out of Oregon, a guy that I think both of us will be talking about to an extent this offseason, or guys like Malachi Moore out of Alabama. I think that you're probably going to have to turn over the roster at some point with these older players, and this might be the offseason where you have to kind of rip that Band-Aid off.
My prediction. Slot corner next year will be Dax Hill.
That's a prediction. I think if they don't find anybody early in the draft, or they don't draft, or they don't pick up a free agent, like you said, like that Cheeto equivalent of a free agent, then yeah, Dax Hill probably is moved to the slot corner. But if you can find
the next Mike Hilton,
yeah, potentially, yeah.
Ethan writes in, should we really keep T. Higgins? Hey, Ethan, next week, this is going to be our topic. Question, should we really keep T. Higgins? As much as I love the man, he's a luxury to have. Should we trade him potentially for picks or a defensive player? So they can't trade him unless they tag him. So that's one thing. But Ethan, if you join us next Wednesday at 8 Eastern, that's going to be our topic. We're literally going to do an entire show on the T. Higgins discussion because there's so many different aspects of it.
Also, if they tag him, his value is shot. Just like the discussion we had this past offseason with T getting tagged.
Correct. We're going to discuss all of that though next week, because there's a ton of different ways for us to discuss when it comes to that. Let's go to corners really quick. Or sorry, safeties. And I think it starts with Geno Stone. To me, it's the most 50-50 decision of the Bengals offseason, if you bring him back or not.
Yeah, especially when you're looking at turning over a lot of roster spots potentially that were starting this past season for the Bengals, turning over another one of Geno Stone might be a bridge too far for your defense not to suffer a little bit. And I mean, we can't pretend like Geno Stone had a great season by any means. I mean, it was a drop off from what we saw in Baltimore. Now the run defense was about the same. We knew what we were getting from him as a run defender. It wasn't a good one. Guy refused to just move up, you know, towards the line of scrimmage to make tackles. But we definitely saw a drop off in the coverage from Geno Stone. Albeit we did see a two-game stretch of elite play and really mediocre to downright shitty play for the rest of the season.
I'm interested to see what they do. And I mean, I agree with what you're saying is that you can't cut anybody. You can't cut everyone on this defense.
No.
You know, especially when you're listing off Rankins, Hubbard, Pratt, you know, you're losing Hilton potentially, and you're just
I would cut Jadon Sone before I'd cut Jermaine Pratt. Let me make that very clear.
Yeah, and I'll just be interested to see how it comes. Now, it's interesting. Paul Daner said, I think he said 50% Geno Stone, 80% for Geno.
He knows Pratt. More than me, and they might be tired of what Jermaine's, you know, of the locker room talk from Jermaine Pratt and that just the downright defensiveness or insecurity that he has just with the level of play from the defense. But if we're just looking at on the field, who's the better player? That's where you keep Jermaine Pratt and not Geno Stone.
Jordan Battle, I think, is going to be a starting safety next year for the Bengals,
which he should have been from the get-go.
Von Bell's gone. I don't know that there's anything more that really needs to be said about either one of those.
I would assume Von Bell probably goes to Indianapolis.
As a very cheap
1-year deal safety.
Yeah, following Lou. That's probably a pretty safe thing. So I think as a whole, this Bengals defense, as we kind of wrap this up, I think kind of going two ways. Reasons for optimism. I know you like this. I think PFF does this, right? Reasons for optimism, reasons for pessimism, right? Or something in this realm.
Sam and Steve do it, yes.
Yeah, okay, that's right. They're not PFF anymore. That's right, I forgot. Optimism. Let's start there. Why are you optimistic about the Bengals defense next year?
There's a lot of talent in the draft class of the of the 2025 NFL draft. I mean, you're looking at a shit ton of edge rushers who are going to go in the first round. You've got a good interior defensive line class, which may not be as top heavy as the edge rushing class, but still plenty deep. I think the corner class is pretty decent as well. I mean, especially where the Bengals are picking. If they look corner in the first round, which there's a chance they might, just given that DJ Turner got hurt towards the back end of the 2024 season. We don't know when he's going to be ready to go in 2025, but if you're looking at guys like Siobhan Revelle and Benjamin Morrison out of Notre Dame.
DJ Turner was a clavicle, so he'll be good.
Oh. For some reason, I thought it was more serious than that. Never mind, DJ Turner's back.
Unless that is the worst clavicle injury ever.
Yeah.
I think he'll be good.
Malachi Starks could be available around that pick as well, where, I mean, I don't know how blatant of a safety need the Bengals have. If they cut Geno Stone, they definitely do.
And maybe that's what causes them to cut Geno Stone.
Yeah.
Is taking a guy like a Malachi Starks, or I know the guy from South Carolina is rising up the boards too.
Nick Amon-Worry.
Yes.
Amon-Worry. Yeah. I think so. That's a reason for optimism. For 2025 and in the future. Another reason for optimism is maybe Al Golden's really good at developing players. Unlike Lou, I mean, you're just getting that change of leadership. You're getting that breath of fresh air. Malachi Moore. Are we talking about Malachi Moore now? Is that who
Riley wants to reunite Jordan Battle and Malachi Moore.
I mocked Malachi Moore to the Bengals 4th round pick. He'll be our nickelback.
Zach says, would love to hear your thoughts. I don't know that we need Zach's thoughts at all when it comes to this. I think for me, it's the youth saw flashes for the Bengals this year. Is, you know, you saw flashes from a bunch of these young guys like McKinley Jackson. Maybe not so much Chris Jenkins, but you saw the flashes from Dax Hill. You saw the flashes from DJ Turner, from Josh Newton, and so on. And you're hoping that those flashes can turn more consistent coming this year. That is my main reason for optimism for this Bengals defense. On the other side, reasons for pessimism.
You've got a lot of roster to turn over here.
Because here's the thing. And I saw Paul Daner make this public. Alex, no, we don't want your thoughts. Does anybody want his thoughts, Mick? I mean, I don't know. Who on this defense next year are you 100% confident will be starting for the Bengals next season?
Who on this defense am I 100%? I mean, Logan Wilson.
And I think he's the only answer.
Dax Hill.
100% confident?
Yes. Dax Hill. Jordan Battle.
But I think that's the biggest reason for pessimism is how many open spots there are. Because on the defensive line, I don't
you
think
have you're a lot of, you have a lot of roster to turn over. And whether it's cutting guys or just getting better players in place than what we have currently. And even if you do have an even if your talent does get better, you know that you do have to these guys do have to play together, and it's going to take a while for them to figure shit out too as well. And that's another thing to keep in mind there.
Alex is 99% on Dax because of his ACL injury recovery timeline. And I think that's part of the reason where you can't be 100% confident Dax. Now, luckily, his ACL was, what, week five? Week six? Yeah, wasn't it relatively early? So you would think that he would be back in time. But then again, you never really can be too confident when it comes to that. That's the main reason for pessimism. And listen, we could be having this conversation in 6 months. And we could say the Bengals killed the draft, the Bengals killed free agency, we're going to win the damn Super Bowl. Or we could be having a conversation like we did over the summer last year, where it was like, that run defense, is it going to be good enough? And we talk ourselves into competing, but in our heart of hearts, we knew that there was a lot more holes than probably needed. And I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see. Any other thoughts on the defense? Or should we start talking about some conference championships?
Now, I mean, just to kind of recap on everything, I mean, it's just, you just didn't see development out of players. And it's the reason why Lou's gone. It's the reason why Al Golden's in. Hopefully you just see younger, you get younger talent on this defense, and we see that talent develop into a defense that we've seen be built through the draft like we did in the early 2010s. So that's just the last note I want to leave on is we have some reasons for hope.
And like Steve says, with our offense, we just need a competent defense. It doesn't need to be elite.
Exactly.
Doesn't need to be good. Honestly, it might not even need to be competent. It just doesn't need to be dog crap like it was this past year. Next week, the T. Higgins discussion. Should he stay or should he go? We are going to go all the way into that. I think we kind of split it up with the reasons why he should stay, the reasons why the Bengals shouldn't re-sign him, and then at the end, we'll both give our opinions, and then I guess we'll both make a prediction as to what the Bengals will look at. Oh, I mean, if the Bengals have a top 15 defense next year, Steve, they're a Super Bowl contender.
Like, if they could just get back to a 2021, 2022 level where, I mean, they weren't the best defense in the league, but they were top 10, fringe top 10.
If I told you the Cincinnati Bengals win the Super Bowl next year, what defensive ranking do you think they would have need to hit?
Probably 15.
15.
Even 16. Well, just go 16 just because it's
middle
50th percentile.
Could they win the Super Bowl with the 20th?
Well, technically, if you're looking at PFF grading, they were the 19th ranked defense this season.
So I guess,
and yes, look where we're at.
I guess Steve says 18th for that. Conference championships, NFC, Commanders against the Eagles. I was reading earlier, I saw somewhere, and I should have pulled it for the show, the comparisons between the Commanders and the Bengals from the Bengals from 2021 and the Commanders this year. You know, quarterback who transferred to LSU, younger quarterback.
Won the Heisman. Didn't win a national championship, though. Let's make that clear.
Beat in the first round game, beat a team that is pirate-themed as a mascot. Raiders and Bucks.
Okay.
Second round, beat the number one seed on their home floor, on home field. It's just funny seeing all of the comparisons between that. Who do you got in that? Does Cinderella continue? No.
Let's not forget that the Lions were playing third and fourth stringers on defense in that game. Eagles win by a comfortable amount.
part of me wants to take the Commanders because I'd love to see the Commanders.
Well, then take them.
I think the Eagles win, but it's close. It's close. Like 24-21, something like that. Or maybe, yeah, 24-21, something like that. It's going to be close. And then the second game, Chiefs Bills. You got the dark magic.
I've bet against the Bills the past 2 weeks, so I'm not gonna regret doing that this week. We're going Bills.
Oh, you're taking the Bills this week. I've said it all season. I will no longer bet against Patrick Mahomes. He's got the dark magic. And did you see who the referee of the Super Bowl is going to be?
Is it Cleet Blakeman?
Much worse. Torbert. Ron Torbert will be the head official. From
why can't you just make Bill Vinovich the head ref for the Super Bowl every year? You know, how hard is that to do?
Adrian Hill? I like Adrian Hill.
I like that Sean guy. The Sean guy.
Yeah, Sean Smith, I think is his name. He was the Bills game. Yeah.
I liked him.
They need to bring back, what's his name? Jerome Boger. Mr. Rome.
Absolutely not. Even though he gifted us that touchdown. Even though that was a touchdown anyways.
Listen, it's good. I did see a stat, too, that had playoff calls over, like, the last 5 years. And the Chiefs are, like, +7 in that category, and the Bengals are -7. It's kind of funny seeing that. I should have pulled that stat as well. That'll wrap us up here for this week. Remember to follow us on our social media channels for Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all of the different ones. We're also on your favorite podcasting platform. Join us next Wednesday live here, same time, same place, 8 Eastern. The T. Higgins discussion happens there. That'll wrap us up. Any parting thoughts?
No.
Then we'll end it with a good old food day. See you next week.
Good day. Thanks for watching.